Welcome to the Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross Show, awakening your full potential and expanding your understanding of how to live fully and joyfully by making conscious choices that promote and maintain vitality in all areas of your life. Now here's your host, Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross.
This is your host, Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross, and today we have a special guest, Amir Soghi, who is an international leader and speaker in the area of self-awareness and human potential. His modern age philosophies ring with truth within his inspired audiences. He's a natural intuitive and shares his wisdom through his writings, teachings, and in speaking his voice on the stages of the world. He's a master of channeling a message that is deep and profound and delivering it with absolute simplicity and clarity for anyone to relate to. He is one of the key contributors in the film The Leap movie, which explores the meaning and purpose of life by questioning reality. He's also the founder of Be Free Events, which promotes self-realization, self-awareness, and hopes to transform the world by expanding people's consciousness. So welcome to the show, Amir.
Thanks, Carolyn. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes. You didn't start out doing intuitive work or human potential work. You started out in business and then had several business failures before finally achieving success in business and then leaving it all behind. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to how you got to where you are?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I started quite young. As soon as I finished school, I went straight into business. I didn't actually go to college or university or anything. I just went straight into business, and I've always kind of been self-employed, you know, whether it was doing the paper run or pizza deliveries or anything like that. And even at school, I used to sell cell phones to kids when they first came out. But look, my first two businesses were failures, and by the age of 21, 22, I was on the verge of bankruptcy. And the third business, you know, they say third time lucky, did quite well, and it did well fast. And I kind of paid all my debts off, and I didn't actually get to the point of declaring bankruptcy, but got myself back on my feet, and you know, there was a lot of goals I had. You know, I had a lot of goals and, you know, material things, and, you know, giving back to the world, and you know, to find you know, goals around doing what I love to do, and I just got to a point where I accomplished many things. I remember sitting one day, moving from a really nice apartment that I was living here in Sydney to an even nicer place in Sydney, right next to the Opera House. And I remember sitting there and unpacking all these boxes. And I don't know if you can, you know, relate to this, but when you're kind of unpacking boxes, you kind of find maybe old photos and you kind of reminisce, and you find old maybe love letters. But anyway, I got to the boxes with all old, you know, personal development programs or spiritual experience. I had a lot of old goals and vision boards and all that kind of stuff. And I started unpacking all that and all these different books that I probably had read or not read. And I started packing all that, and I started to see some of the things that I wanted to accomplish. Some of the things that I thought, if I can accomplish these, then I will feel secure. I would feel safe. I would feel happy. And I'm looking outside my window, and one of the things I read was to live on the water with city views and harbour bridge views, and that's exactly what I had. You know, and I'm going through this list, and there's all these things that I was ticking off. I'm like, yeah, I've got a similar boat to that. Yeah, I've got a similar car to that. Yeah, I've got a similar relationship with that. And I went through all these things, ticking, and the point of my story is I got to a point where I thought to myself, wow, you know, I've accomplished a lot. I've gone from nearly being bankrupt to accomplishing all these, you know, big goals and dreams. And around the same moment when I realized that, I felt a sense of emptiness. And the sense of emptiness was, it felt like it was not enough. There was still something missing. And that's kind of what really pulled me within myself to search for more, because I realized that if I was making $20,000 a month, I wanted to make 40. If I was making 40, I wanted to make 60. If I had a 40-foot boat, I wanted a 60-foot boat. It was just never enough. It was just never, I felt like I was chasing this carrot that was dangling.
Was it, be, Was it because your goals were all in the superficial realm in terms of, you know, more money, more things, more appearances? Was that what was missing for you? Or was it that, I mean, had you had any goals that were more on a deeper level?
You know what? It's a really good question. And what I've come to realize is that, you know, we always have two different types of goals. And those goals that are driven from the head and those goals that are driven from the heart. And they could be superficial, materialistic, or non-materialistic. It doesn't matter. It's just where does the goal come from? And the goals that come from the head are driven from that empty feeling that you find within yourself. Everyone, when they sit still and they don't get so busy and disconnect from their day-to-day stuff, sometimes we make ourselves so busy just so we can connecting to that empty feeling that we may find within ourselves. So that empty feeling then fuels these ideas that come into your head that you intellectually create to go, well, I need to go and find the right partner. I need to go and fix, improve, or change my life in this way so I can make this empty feeling go away. Mm-hmm. And those are the goals that I'm talking about. You know, you kind of put everything into it. You know, for me, it was like a 5 to 7 year journey. I put all these, you know, I always say you put your, you always put your blood, sweat, and tears into something, and then you accomplish it, but then you're left with this empty feeling still, and you're like, what's going on here? Because, you know, I thought if I find the right partner, I would be happy. Then you're thinking, well, if I get rid of this partner, I would be happy, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like
you can never be satisfied because those goals, as you say, aren't from the heart or from the soul.
Exactly. And the goals that come from the heart and from the soul, the amazing thing about them is that they're not reliant on the destination or the outcome to be materialized before you can feel that sense of fulfillment. The moment you follow the goal from the soul or from the heart, or when I talk about intuition, from your intuition, and the moment you follow it is the same moment that you feel this sense of fulfillment. And that's when you really experience that life is not about the destination. It truly is about the journey. That's when you really not just know that, but have a deeper, direct experience of that.
So when you got to this critical point where you felt the emptiness was still there in spite of all you had accomplished, how did you get from there to knowing that it was intuition and shifting your goals to heart goals, heart-centered goals? Did you have mentors or what did you do?
When I was talking about my third business, I used to be a promoter, and I used to promote different speakers, and I've worked with people like, you know, Wayne Dyer, Tony Robbins, and, you know, all those John DeMartini, and we used to work with these different speakers in Australia. And so my third business was a promotion company. To answer your question, when I got to the point of realizing that, hang on, all these accomplishments are not making me happy, and when I was being really honest and true with myself, I felt that, I got to a point where I made a decision where I no longer wanted to do something because I needed to do. You know, I understood that, you know, there's two energies that make up who we are. One is love, one is fear. And I understood that every time I was doing something because I needed to do it, because if I didn't do it, I would lose my status, credibility, or success. Or if I didn't do it, I'd lose my sense of security and all that kind of stuff. The moment I felt like I needed to do something, I started to feel like I had this rope around my neck. I felt like I was suffocating. I just got to a point where I thought to myself, I no longer want to do things that I need to do. But to answer your question about mentors, you know, I had a lot of mentors around me because being in the industry, you know, being in the industry of self-help and spirituality for over 11 years now, I had a lot of mentors to choose from. But I got to a point where I realized that every mentor or every teacher out there is giving you a different piece of the puzzle of truth, different piece of the puzzle of purpose and meaning to your life. But it's until you find that final piece, you know, if you're putting a picture puzzle together, you start to put parts of it together, but until you, there's always like this one piece missing. Until you find that final piece, none of the pieces will connect and none of the pieces will make sense to the point that you can live it, you know? a lot of these mentors and teachers have taught me things, and I've got to a point of knowing it. But there's a big difference between knowing it and actually being it. Being it will allow you to actually live it. So that final piece I'm talking about was myself. You know, I realized that I need to go within myself. I've gone and read books, I've done all these programs, and I need to dive within myself and find this for myself, within myself. And the person who supported me on that path was actually my mother. My mother's quite a wise lady, and she supported me. She realized that she kind of guided me and said, you need to find this. All these things that you know in your head, all these things that you intellectually understand, you need to be able to know it in your heart. You need to be able to find it within yourself. So I took an inward journey. I even stopped reading books. I got to a point where I stopped reading books, I stopped going to any programs, and started to realize the truth within myself. And today, that's what I do. I teach people to find the answer within themselves, not to come to my programs and learn something new, because the truth is not something that can be taught. It's not something that you can learn. It's only something that you can experience for yourself, and everyone's experience is different. So my mother has been the person who's kind of guided me on that path. But my path changed. My path was no longer about finding the tools, you know, the next tool or the next teacher or the next guru that can help me fix, improve, or change my life. I let go of needing to fix, improve, or change my life. And when I let go of needing to fix, improve, or change my life, I realized the deeper truth of who I am. And when you realize that and have a deeper experience of that, you realize there's nothing to fix, improve, or change. And the amazing thing is that's when everything fixes, improves, or changes itself without you having a tool or forcing it to happen. It's more of an allowance. You kind of allow the change to happen. Yeah, that's been my journey.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you translate what you learned to teach other people how to get in touch with their intuition?
Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do was when I started to connect deeper to my intuition, I wanted to actually, you know, within my work, share with people how to experience their intuition. But I realized that, well, intuition is something that's formless. It's not something that's tangible. And I realized that, you know, I questioned myself. I said, well, how do you teach somebody to use their intuition? You know, because we all have these two voices in our head, and we can get distracted which one's which. You know, one of the voices probably just said to you, which two voices? And I was just thinking to myself, well, how can I get someone to experience their intuition? And I knew it's not really something you could teach. I mean, you could attempt to teach it. It's like if someone comes up to you right now and goes, you've experienced being in love, and someone comes up to you and says, hey, you know, what's it like being in love? You can attempt to teach them. You can attempt, you know, to describe it into words. But once you've put a description to the feeling of love, you've now changed it, and it's become a version of what you feel.
Right.
And until that person has a direct experience of it, they won't really know what you're talking about. One of the things I realized is that for me to be able to teach someone to use their intuition, which I'm saying is not possible, the only way I can get close is by speaking intuitively. So what I do in all my talks and my programs is I allow people to experience what I call the flow. And the flow is an expression of the intuition.
Okay.
And I do that by speaking in the flow. I do that by speaking intuitively. And I, before a lot of my talks, I actually give people a little bit of guidance, and I say, you know, I want you to listen to me intuitively, because if I can get them to listen intuitively, and if I'm speaking intuitively, they will have a direct experience of their intuition. You know, and I get them to do that by getting them to not just listen to my words, but rather listen to where the words are coming from, because where the words are coming from, you and I are one. There is a feeling where you will come to realize, yeah, I know what he's talking about. I can feel it. It may not make logical sense, because there's no logic in intuition. It may not make logical sense, but I can feel it. And it feels like somehow I've always known it. And
would you say that your conversation with me now is talking in the flow?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you feel that you're talking in the flow at all times now in your life?
Yeah, I mean, sure, I would go to my left brain, which is the logical mind, and I'll use the logical mind. I just went and paid for a coffee or paid for something. I'll use the logical mind to determine the change. I'll use the logical mind to book a flight, the left brain. So what's changed for me, what's shifted, is that the logical mind is no longer making decisions for me. Because most people will make their decisions, there's a heart fueling their decision. That will limit the heart, which is infinite, which is the heart speaks only the language of love, or the language of possibilities. That will limit that heart language, the intuitive feeling, by going and making a decision logically. So the logic is limited because the logic goes and refers to all the external forces. It goes and refers to all the past and future, which is limitation. Mm-hmm. Okay, because in this present moment, all things are possible in the present moment. The moment you see this present moment from the eyes of the past or the eyes of the future, you limit it to what you think is possible based on your past experiences, based on your external references.
I think it's a very important point you're making, because you said earlier there are two energies in life, love and fear. And I think most of us try very hard to operate from love, but often are handicapped by fears from the past, you know, losses that we've experienced or failures that have happened. And, you know, we try to benefit from those failures, but often in trying to do that, live from the fear. So I just wonder, again, you know, how do people remove emotional blocks to using their intuition? For example, you know, as a parent, I may experience a lot of emotional pain when one of my children struggles with an issue. And how can I switch from living in the fear for them versus talking with them from my intuition?
It's a very simple answer, what I'm about to give you, but it's very difficult. You know, what's simple to do is also simple not to do. But the answer is acceptance. And I'm not talking about, you know, 90% acceptance. I'm talking about a wholehearted acceptance. And this may be very difficult to do depending on what the circumstances are, especially when it's relating to your children. But I remember, if I can tell you a story of a consultation that I once had, and it's of a woman who came and saw me. She was a lawyer, and she would represent children who had been abused. Now, she wasn't just a lawyer. The amazing thing was she was also a healer. So she would work on these children. She would represent these children who have been abused, but she would also work with them and to bring them to a point of healing. And she had this blockage coming up with a couple of the children she was working with. And she came and saw me, and she said, you know, why am I creating this blockage? You know, I can't heal. I'm experiencing blockage in my flow. And I said to her, what came out in that consultation was the challenge is that you're in judgment. You see, the opposite of acceptance is judgment. When I was talking about acceptance, that's the opposite of judgment. So, and she goes, well, what do you mean I'm in judgment? I'm here to serve these children. I'm not in judgment. And I said, you're not in judgment of the children. You're in judgment of what the children have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, of course I'm in judgment of what they experienced. They have been abused. And I said, look, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. All I'm saying to you is that the moment you are in judgment, your healing power is minimized. Okay, because the moment you're in judgment, you're coming from the state of fear. Love has no judgment. Love is your healing power. Love is acceptance. So the moment you're in judgment for someone else, or you have judgment towards something else, then right there, you have blocked, you have created blockage for your infinite power, which is love.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very powerful, because I think as a parent, you know, we often have judgments that we make about a direction our children's life is going on, for example, or they should do better in school, because if they don't, they'll, you know, and I work a lot with addictions and eating disorders, And I always have parents come to me at the breaks in my talks to say, well, I'm really, really worried about my daughter because she's obese, or my son because he's using drugs. And actually, that's one of the things that I tell them, accept them as they are. That's the first step to change. And the Buddhists have an expression called radical acceptance that is just as you describe, right, which I think is a beautiful principle, but hard to do.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to do. But if you can come to a point of accepting, then you will free yourself from the identity, and the healing will come from not your identity, but from your true essence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes the acceptance can be very, very difficult. I had my middle son who suffered with mental illness for 10 years. He became homeless and, you know, was kind of left our family and was out on the streets and eventually died in relationship to his mental illness. People often say to me, well, why didn't you put him on medications? Well, why didn't you, as a parent, of course, I had done everything that I could even dream about to help him. But at the end of the day, I had to accept that that was his journey, that there was, you know, I was part of his journey, but I wasn't the journey. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And if you don't mind, I might share another story of acceptance which may be supportive.
Yes, sure. We have about 2 minutes if you have enough time to do that. Okay.
Well, I'll try to wrap this up really quickly. And it's a story of when I was younger. The biggest moment of acceptance that I've experienced is when I was with a girlfriend of mine, and I took her home one day, and she was going inside to change into a house. She went inside, and I was waiting outside. And after a couple minutes, you know, maybe 5 minutes, I'm thinking, where is she? She said she's only going to be a couple minutes. You know, five minutes turned into 10 minutes, and I'm thinking, oh, you know, women, they take so long. So I started walking towards the house, and as I started walking towards the house, I heard this screaming, and I screamed back, and she said, there's someone in here raping me. And it was such an intense experience, and I'm trying to break into the door, and I'm screaming back, and I'm basically, at the end of the day, broken through the window, and by the time I got in there, the guy had ran out. Mm. And you know, she wasn't raped, but there was a guy in there, you know, there was a burglary in progress. He was trying to rob the house, and he saw a pretty girl, and he thought she was alone, and he thought he'd take advantage of her. Huh. But the point of the story is that, you know, I took it to my mum because, you know, as I said, my mum's a very wise lady, and I wanted my mum to be able to help her because it was such a traumatic experience, as you can imagine.
Sure.
And my mum sat down with her, and she said, you need to accept this. And she said, well, how can I accept this? You know, this is, you know, and she started crying, and she was all hysterical. And my mom said, the way you accept it is by loving him. Now, at this stage, I'm like, mom, you know, please, you know, and she's crying. And she said, how can I love someone that tried to rape me? And she said to her, if that was your brother and your brother broke into a home, and he raped the girl, and something came over him, and he raped the girl, would you still love your brother? And she turned around and went, well, I would, because my brother, I mean, I still have an unconditional love as my brother. I wouldn't agree with what he's done, but I would still love him. Mm. And she said, he's your brother too. We all come from one source. And if you can find the love for who he truly is, not the role he was playing, not the identity he was portraying. If you can find love for who he truly is, he's your brother as well.
I think your mom is a very profound woman. We need to have her on the program next week, I think. We need to stop now and go to break. And when we come back, more with Amir and talking about intuition and acceptance and human potential.
Are you struggling with an eating disorder, an addiction, or need help with anxiety or depression? The next time you feel a surge of emotions coming on, instead of reaching for those salty chips, reach for your headphones and listen to a free audio meditation from Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. Go to carolynrossmd.com. That's carolynrossmd.com, and get your free audio meditation and gain control over your cravings today.
I'm here with my special guest, Amir Zoghi, And he's a very interesting guy who is a philosopher, a leader, and speaker in the self-awareness and human potential arenas. So before break, we were talking about acceptance, and I loved your story about your girlfriend and, you know, the attempted rape that she experienced. And just as a wrap up, was she able to get to that place of loving him as a brother?
Well, you know what? We never spoke about it after that, but I know she got to a point of, you know, releasing it. And that's what happens when you come to the point of acceptance. Uh-huh. It's when you truly accept something, there's no more requirement for forgiveness. It's just, it's almost like you neutralize a charge. What makes up who we are is a positive and negative charge. And the moment you get to a point of acceptance, you neutralize that charge, which means you release it. It's almost like you become free from the memory of it. Now, if you don't get to a point of acceptance, then that charge stays within you, and you will continue to recreate similar experiences. And I'm not talking about being raped again, but you will continue to, for example, recreate experiences where you've been overpowered by someone else and you have no control. She was very young at that stage. She was like, 18 years of age. And I always find that young people get this so much easier and simpler, and it's because they have less emotional positive nor negative charges that they're suppressed within the body. And so she got to a point, and we never had to speak about it again. It was gone. It was not because she was in denial and she didn't want to go there again. She freed herself from it, and she's actually quite a successful person back in Australia now, and living a very fulfilled life.
That's wonderful. Well, I'd like to shift to a little bit different topic and talk about what is the place of wealth in success. How does that fit in with what you're talking about?
Wealth and success.
Because, you know, you said that you were wealthy and successful in your promotional business. And now, I mean, I'm assuming you're very successful. It seems to be that you're very successful now. Mm. Is it a different feeling?
It is a different feeling. I mean, before I would get my sense of certainty, my sense of security, my status, my credibility from what I've done. My purpose would come from what I did in the world. But you get to a point where your material possessions, even what you do, so what you do and what you have in life, no longer makes you who you are and no longer determines your sense of fulfillment. You know, you get to a point where if you can let go of the identity, it's not about letting go of the material possessions, it's about letting go of the identity that you have created with the material possessions, which allows you to let go of the attachments that you've created to the material possessions. So you get to a point where you kind of let go of your identity of those material possessions, and you realize that fulfillment is in who you're being, or purpose is in who you're being. In other words, purpose is in who you are. And when you realize that purpose is who you are no longer looking to find purpose in what you do. You're not even looking for purpose in what you give. You're actually finding purpose in who you are, and then you choose to give purpose to what you do. It turns the game upside down. Before, you're looking to find purpose and meaning and fulfillment in what you do, you know, and even in what you get. But when you find the truth of who you are, when you let go of of who you are as being identified with what you've created in the external and the material world, then you realize that's not who you are, and you're free to place your attention on the truth of who you are. You realize that fulfillment, purpose, is actually who you are. That sense of fulfillment, that sense of life, that sense of joy, that sense of purpose, it's who you are. Mm-hmm. So because it's who you are, you're no longer looking to do something so you can live in purpose. You give purpose to what you do. It becomes the opposite.
Hmm. You know, in the old days, and a lot of the people that you worked with, like who founded kind of the human potential movement and the New Age philosophies from the 60s and so on, were criticized as their work kind of placing too much emphasis on the self and creating a generation that's only focused on me, 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 kind of a narcissistic generation. What do you think about that?
You know, that's a little rule that the identity or the ego has created, because the ego creates its identity in the material world. It creates its identity in what you do, in the problems. The reason the ego creates its identity from the material world is because the ego doesn't have an identity. So it looks to build its identity. The ego is the part of you that doesn't know who it truly is. So it continuously is looking to build its identity in both the positive manner, but also in the negative manner. So through negative experiences and through positive experiences. And that ego will fight for its existence. It will fight wars. It will kill people. It will manipulate people. It will manipulate yourself. And it will kill yourself. And I'm saying kill yourself. I'm talking about killing your own soul. Okay? Mm-hmm. The reason it's doing that is because it's fighting for its identity. Why is it fighting for its identity? Because it doesn't have one. But the moment you realize who you truly are, there is no identity. It's, and I can't explain this part in human words. I mean, when you connect with the truth of who you are, you can't identify with one thing, because who you truly are is an infinite source, and something that's infinite cannot be labeled. The moment you say, this is what it is, this is who I am, or this is what I'm part of, then you've just limited that infinite source. The moment you label something and say, this is it, the whole idea of people going, well, hang on, if you're making it about yourself, it's being selfish. It's actually not. It's being selfless. You've come here to lose yourself in the identity, but then to rediscover the truth of who you are. And to be able to rediscover the truth of who you are, you've got to get to a point of being selfless. And the ego has created little things and little patterns in the world to say, no, you shouldn't be about yourself. It should be always about other people. The truth is that when you come to a point of realizing who you are beyond the self, because you become so much, you experience so much joy and fulfillment, your natural tendency is to express that to other people. And then people think, oh, they're a giving person. You see, then the identity or the egos are watching someone who's giving to other people because they've found their true sense of self. And then they go, well, to be loving, that's what I need to do. I need to make it all about the service. I need to make it all about the giving. But they are doing that with an agenda to be loving. And love does not have an agenda. That person who's truly giving without an agenda, they're not giving because they to be loving. They're giving because they already are loving. They've connected to the true essence of love. And when you connect to your true essence of love, your natural tendency is to express that. You have so much of it, it's just flowing through. You just naturally express it. And, you know, that's one of the things I always say is that, we haven't come here to build the world. We've come here to find ourselves, find our true essence, and then express into the world.
Besides being successful at what you do, what are the measures that you would know that you are expressing your true essence, your authentic self? Like, how would you know if you're not studying with a guru or you're just a regular working stiff? How does one know that they're doing that?
You know, it's quite simple. You know when you're coming from your true authentic self, because what you do doesn't have an agenda. When you're doing something, it's not coming from an agenda. The world, your physical world, is not determining whether you feel a sense of fulfillment, whether you feel a sense of self. You are determining. You show up and your world molds around you. Most people are looking at how what they say is going to be received, how what they do is going to be appreciated or not. Okay? They're looking at the external world and then determine how they're going to show up. When you're coming from your true authentic self, you no longer look at the world and determine what's going to show up. You show up the way you want to show up. You show up with the feelings of what feels true. You say what feels true for you, and the world will mold around you.
Is there still struggle in your life when you are in that place of, you know, because so many people experience kind of suffering and struggle.
You know what? There's a difference between struggle and suffering. Suffering is caused from the resistance of, you know, a difficult situation, for example. Suffering is caused from the resistance of what is happening. You know, I always talk to people about doing what they love to do. You know, it's the first thing you got to do. It's the biggest thing that people don't do is do what their heart says to do. But people confuse that. When I say do what you love to do, they confuse that with do what's easier to do. When I'm doing what I love to do, it doesn't mean that I won't create struggle. But I can tell you I won't create suffering because I go with the flow of what's happening. And, you know, there's one thing that's different from my, you know, way of living and the way of building my business compared to the way I used to build it is there's no more attachment. There's no more resistance. There's a sense of joy and fulfillment along the way. You know, I'm not looking to arrive at the outcome before I can get a sense of fulfillment. I'm already fulfilled right now in this moment. Right now I'm having this conversation with you. I'm feeling fulfillment and joy right now. So I'm not looking for the outcome to arrive or for the result to be materialized before I can get that sense of fulfillment.
So we have a couple minutes before the break, and I wondered if you had any examples, like a story of someone you've worked with who's been able to change their lives and become more fully expressive.
You know, every day I'm working with different people who are, you know, I run a program called the Quest for Truth Experience, which is a whole weekend program. And once somebody is uncovering the mask of who they are and letting go of all these goals and the agendas that were driven from their head, they immediately become free within their life. But what's coming to me right now is the example that I wanted to give just a moment ago, which is, you know, for example, if someone is climbing, you know, has a love to climb Mount Everest, for example, it doesn't mean that it's easy. You know, to do what you love to do is not mean that it's easy. It doesn't mean there's going to be no risk involved. It doesn't mean, you know, you're not going to break a limb. It doesn't mean it's not going to be tiring to climb Mount Everest. But it means it's going to be effortless. It means that your soul is free while you're going through this physical difficulty in climbing this mountain. There is a blissful state within your soul. There is a natural, effortless experience that you are having when you're doing what you love to do.
I wanted to just ask you, as a leader in this field, what do you think is the future of human potential? Where do you think we're going with all of this?
Well, a little bit about it is that, you know, I mean, I'm sure everybody can feel that the world is, as a collective, there's a shift taking place. And there's a lot of talk about the 2012, the Mayan calendar ending. And, you know, some people say the world as we know it ends. My feeling about that is that it's the world as we know it. What we're talking about is the world that's been driven by the ego or the world that's been driven by fear. And those who are living and building their life from fear will create great difficulties because the shift that's taking place is that consciousness that came here and manifested itself to be unconscious is becoming conscious of itself. In other words, that we are truly awakening to the true potential of who we truly are. And for that to happen, the ego begins to die. So the ego as a collective begins to die. So the world as we know it changes. It's resembling that. Okay.
So when you're working with people who are kind of new to the self-awareness path, what would you share with them?
I do a talk called Intuitive Warrior. And I get people from who is just new to the path, and I get people who have been on the path for 20, 30 years and been traveling to all the eastern countries and been searching for the truth. And, I always say that the deeper that you're experiencing the truth, the easier you're able to articulate it. And that's one of my gifts, is to be able to articulate the truth or intuition or meaning or purpose in such a simple manner that that, you know, it's so easy to digest. And sometimes the people who have been on this path for a very long time find it more difficult because they've put more stuff into their head of it should be this way, it should be that way. And someone who's coming for the very first time is, you know, kind of digests easier. So, yeah, I do this talk called Intuitive Warrior, and I get everybody from
How would people find out about these events, the Intuitive Warrior events?
Yeah, you know what? I'm really excited at the moment because I'm actually in America right now and doing the Intuitive Warrior event, and I'm going to be coming back through, I think it looks like at the moment, so I'll be coming back once a month or every couple of months to America, and it's been that there's been a market for me here, and people are feeling really drawn towards it. So they can find out about the Intuitive Warrior event by just going to our website address, which is intuitivewarrior.com.au. So it's intuitivewarrior.com.au.
Okay. Intuitivewarrior.com.au?
.au. The greatest thing about the work or the thing that's so different about this is it's not another program. I'm not there to teach you something that you already know. All my programs is about living it. It's that's the point that I got to in my life where I just went, okay, I know all this stuff, and that's the kind of people I draw in. Is people who are like, yeah, I know this, I've been on this path, I know this, but how can I live it? How can I be this? How can I experience that true potential? Because if I am in an infinite source, why am I experiencing limitation? Why am I experiencing fear? How can
and
I
scarcity
live?
And lack.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and so you're not wanting to become a guru and have people follow you around and listen to your every word. You're wanting to really return them to themselves, essentially.
I'm so glad that you get me. Exactly. I'm so glad that I am the furthest thing from a guru. You know, I'm not here to be a guru, and that's what I ran away from, and that's why I sold my company, because that's what we were doing, and my previous company I'm talking about. I'm here to take people back home to themselves. And that's an inner path that they've got to follow. I'm here to get people to find that final piece of the puzzle. And that final piece of the puzzle is themselves. And when they can find that, then all the things that they've learned in their life, the different programs and different gurus and different, you know, life experiences will start to make more sense, and they will be able to live it.
Yeah. Do you think being in community with like-minded people in any way helps, though? Because you can have those insights, you know, and then you come home and kind of get buried under your struggles. Mm. And I think many people don't have those kinds of, you know, whether you call them spiritual communities or whatever kind of communities where they have other people that they can bounce things off of.
Absolutely. It's critical. You know, I think the more you're around people who on the same journey, the more support you're going to create. So, and I think that I feel that if you're truly on this path, you would be creating people of like-minded nature. So,
so you would attract those. In other words,
yeah, you would create that. You would naturally do that. If you, I mean, right now you're created for yourself to listen to this recording, this conversation that we're having right now. So, we create our lives all the time, moment by moment.
Well, actually, this being on the radio for me came out of a feeling of not being connected to kind of the expanded consciousness that perhaps I had been in earlier days in my life. And I thought, how can I continue to expose myself to new ideas and new thoughts? And next thing I knew, I was on the radio listening to people like you, which is great.
That's actually a really interesting point, because that's exactly why I started doing what I'm doing. The reason I never went out to become a speaker, I mean, I was a shy guy who would promote speakers.
You don't seem very shy, Amir, I have to say.
I tell you what, when the message is coming through, the message that's flowing through is not shy. But I used to be the shy guy. I used to be, you know, really nervous and get on stage and all that kind of stuff. But the point is that the reason I started speaking is because the more I started to speak or write about it or coach about it, then the deeper it would take me within myself, the deeper connection I would find within myself. And
which
that's why
really
now
powerful.
I actually train people to do what I do, to become intuitive coaches, intuitive speakers, and intuitive writers.
I run a 12-month
program about that.
So people can find out more about all of your programs at intuitivewarrior.com.au. Is that correct?
That's the one, yeah.
Okay. And I'm sorry to say, but that's all the time that we have today. I really want to thank you, Amir Zoghi. His last name is spelled Z-O-G-H-I, I believe.
Yeah.
So thank you, Amir. I'm your host, Dr. Carolyn Coker-Ross, and I'll talk to you next week. Until then, I wish you good health and vitality.
You have been listening to the Dr. Carolyn Coker-Ross Show. Please visit CarolynRossMD.com. That's CarolynRossMD.com to access podcasts, show archives, and more about Dr. Ross and her services.